Hey, this is your host, Joe Morgan. Welcome to this episode of Post Combat Normal. I wanted to go ahead and talk to you guys about something interesting today. You know, a lot of you guys, you come home from war, you have your post-trauma, you know, post-combat normal, as we call it, but, you know, post-traumatic stress, as other people call it. And a lot of you guys, you know, any veterans I know, you go in with mental and physical trauma. You've been given pills by the truckload. You often go to therapists that are civilians. They don't have any experience in combat. They don't have any way to understand the complexities of what you're going through. I've been really lucky. I found an amazing team in Citrus Heights that I would recommend to anybody, their therapy program, their style of therapy. But for those of you who are somewhere in the country that you can't get to a program that you like, you can't get to a therapist that you like, you can't get to a group that you like, today's program, we're going to talk about a different type of treatment that can be done at home by yourself. It's free. It's easy. And it's gaining pretty wide acceptance with even hardcore military dudes. For years, a lot of people thought that it wasn't something that a manly man would do, and now everybody's saying it does, it works, and when you try it, it works. So I want to go ahead and introduce today's guest. Liberty Mitchell. So Liberty, welcome to the show.
Well, nice to be here, Jeff. Thank you.
Now, the simple thing I wanted to start with is Lib, what got you – well, go ahead and tell the listeners what got you into yoga yourself. How did you start into it?
Well, I actually first had my first yoga class almost 25 years ago this summer. I was 20 years old, and I went to spend the summer in Boulder, Colorado. And this was actually just following the death of my father. I was just doing some soul searching and trying out new things. And there was this amazing place called the Naropa Institute, which is now the Naropa University, which was founded by a deep poet, Allen Ginsberg, and they had all these, you know, funky classes to try out for the summer session. So I tried to get into Tai Chi, but that was full. So I said, okay, I'll try yoga, you know, just for something to do. And I really loved it. I just felt so good afterwards. And, you know, I was going through a lot of pain and confusion. And I found just like the physical release I got was great, but also just the mental, just from the deep, the breathing is what really resonated. And I'm very lucky that my first teacher was a very legit guy. He wore like this kind of yogic diaper, if you will. He was very austere. He was a Westerner, like he was a white guy, but he, you know, he never really broke. He wasn't warm and fuzzy. He was a very serious teacher, but, you know, that was, that 6-week course really laid a, you know, grounding for me. And it's funny to see now that yoga is like on every corner. And, you know, now we have the internet now. We didn't have it back then. But it's really, really grown, and which is a wonderful thing. And it's been ever since I was, you know, started practicing back then, it's always been a part of my life. But I've been teaching now for about 10 years.
Okay. All right. Now, one of the things I wanted to tell my listeners, most important of all, some yoga is so gentle that veterans, even with other health conditions, serious physical limitations, can still take part. A lot of the guys are saying, oh, I can't do that because of my back. I can't do that because of my ankles. I can't do that because of X, Y, and Z. And most people actually find most of the postures comfortable and easy to do. Can you touch on that some?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions about what yoga is or supposed to be and who can do it. Yoga is for everybody, basically. If you can breathe, you can do yoga. Okay, if you're listening to this right now, then I'm assuming you're breathing, right?
I hope so. I really hope so.
I mean, that's taking a leap, but I'm just going to make that assumption. I teach a lot of seniors, people, you know, a lot of men, who aren't very flexible. I can't do yoga, I'm not flexible. I go, well, that's kind of the point of doing it then, right? Get some flexibility. But flexibility is a relative term too. You know, it's not about whether your head ever touches your knees or you can reach the floor and put your head, leg up to the ceiling. You know, some of us, like, and I'm in that category, are just naturally like hyper flexible, which in its own way is something that needs to be supplemented in the back end. I need to build up more strength in the different ways, you know, so I'm almost too flexible. But you see people who can just, you know, seemingly easily do these poses, and it can be alienating. But that's not what it's about. right? It comes down to the poses are suggestions, and I teach, they have whole models now like chair yoga. I'm actually hoping to eventually go and get my master's in yoga therapy. They have a whole program at Loyola University, and more, you know, insurance is starting to accept this. Just like acupuncture and chiropractic, you know, once upon a time, 20, 25 years ago, was a very new concept, at least to
Westerners.
You know, the American insurance industry. But now people say, hey, these modalities work for people, just like, you know, yoga works for bringing calm, for soothing physical ailments, and it, you know, and a little goes a really long way. And I am, after 25 years of practice, you know, I've done it all. I don't like the hot yoga. I don't like getting that hot. Some people do. But, you know, I've done the power yoga. There's a lot of different styles. I prefer now a more subtle or yin or restorative yoga. Doesn't mean I won't power out once in a while, but like yoga doesn't need to be your workout. You know, it can be, but I think, you know, Westerners are like, oh, it's in the gym, workout. If I don't, you know, do it till I'm crawling out of there, I haven't done anything. That's an outdated mentality, and it really doesn't serve us. And I'm telling you, like, I've had students, you know, guy couldn't even put his hands on his shoulders and just doing this really subtle practice, just moving, you know, a couple inches in each direction, a little bit every week. You know, he suddenly, after 6 months, could put his hands on his shoulders. And it's just slow, you know, a long, slow, and do what you can. But it is hard. I'm not going to say it's not hard to get past the ego at first and, oh, God, I felt like an idiot. That guy was so good. And it's your practice, you know. And when you go into a class or you have an instruction, you know, the best teachers will say it's, you know, honor where you're at, figure out what you need to succeed, whether you need to sit in a chair, whether you need to have a block or, you know, some pillows or things to give you more, stack you up. I have to, at this point, I'm much more comfortable if I sit on a bolster, like some pillows, instead of just flat cross-legged. Once I get really warmed up, I could be comfortable doing that, but, you know, or my knee needs a lot of support sometimes. So, whatever, it's like at the end of the day, it's a personal practice, whether or not you're doing it in a class with 10 or 50 people, or if you're by yourself and working through it on your own. So you just got to figure out what you need in the moment each day, you know, and not holding on to, oh, well, a week ago I was able to, you know, hold this pose for 2 minutes and now I can't even stand up straight. Doesn't matter. Are you breathing? You know, you got to breathe it through.
So,
does that make it be stuck
again? No, that's absolutely perfect. I, one of the things that I did wrong when I wanted to learn about this, I don't generally go in public. A lot of us have that same problem. We try to hide in our own houses. So I thought, hey, I want to try this. Everybody says it works. I went and bought a DVD. It's a Rodney Yee beginner yoga.
Yeah.
And I watched this guy get into this first position, and I turned off the DVD. I said, there's never in my life, unless I get in a car wreck, a chance that I can get in that position. You know, like unless I'm if I'm in that position, I need a hospital immediately. And I thought that's what yoga was the bending and the – and then years later, 3 years, 4 years later, during one of my therapy sessions, somebody brought up deep breathing. And myself, I learned to do the deep breathing during triggering events. And instead of resorting to violence or aggression, which is my usual go-to, you know, you cut me off in traffic and I think I'm going to keep you as a pet and teach you manners. And now I go, okay, I'm going to catch my breath. I'm going to, you know, do some deep breathing. Just at the next stoplight, just – and you feel better and it works. It's not about – you know, it's not always about the positions, and that's where I was wrong. And so one of the things I wanted to ask you, and it's really important to me that this gets across to the audience, is how can you tell – you know, you even said you had a great initial teacher. How can you tell what kind would be for you, where you should start? I mean, is there something a person could look for in an instructor or a style that would be best for a PTSD stress-type therapy or even just a stress-type therapy? That's the right way to say that.
I would say, first of all, you know, if you do your search, look up yoga therapy. See if anything comes up in your in your area, or, you know, restorative. That's also a word, you know, that's or beginners, but restorative really, you know, leans more towards just really gentle yoga. I actually once, I did a yoga training at Camp Pendleton.
Oh, okay.
And they had a great program there. Like, I was working at the time for a nonprofit, and they were interested in supporting, you know, seeing various ways we could support our California military. And they were like, no, they were set. They didn't need any more support. Their yoga program, they were really dropped into that there. So if you have access, you know, if you're Pendleton, that's an amazing thing. So I don't, you know, there might be more out there than you even know about. It's just, you know, it's kind of like they have AA meetings in jail, but people don't necessarily go, even if they need it, right? So it's to take advantage of the resources that we do have. Now, as far as finding out what a good teacher is, a good teacher will answer questions, and if they don't know the answer, they will be honest about that. You know, sometimes people will come up and say, like, you know, I have whatever, like Crohn's disease. What's the best pose to do? And I say, you know, I don't know offhand. I'd be happy to research, but, you know, I suggest that you look online. I mean, in this day and age, we're so lucky. You know, I used to just go searching out books and to find things, and now you can go online, and there's so many amazing sites. There is, you know, there's the Yoga Alliance, which is kind of like a yoga union, so to speak, that was established, that's supposed to, you know, supposedly be like, these are legit teachers. I'm not a part of the Yoga Alliance at this point, but yet I've taught more hours than, and I know plenty of people who aren't. It's kind of something you have to buy into, but at the same time, you know, you can check Yoga Alliance, and they'll say teachers in your area that are certified, so you'll know that they have had at least 200 hours of instruction, you know, or 500, and so that's one way of determining, but again, that doesn't necessarily make a great teacher, because some people, you know, another thing to ask is, how long have you practiced yoga? Because I've met people who are like, oh, yeah, I have my 500-hour RYT, that's registered yoga teacher, or 200-hour RYT. And they say, oh, well, how long have you practiced? Oh, about 4 years. Like, oh, well, I'm a little less interested in what that person's bringing to the table, especially if it's more of a sport yoga or power, which is great. I'm just saying it's not a bad practice. But I'm much more interested in a person who has been around a while, who's tried different things. You know, I've never been to India. That's like the holy grail, obviously, if you're into yoga, to go experience that. But I've obviously worked with plenty of people who have, and there's so many different lineages and philosophies behind it. So, you know, it can be a little overwhelming. But, you know, some of my best teachers have been at the YMCA. That's actually where I teach. Just once a week, I've taught the same class for 8.5 years. And, you know, here and there, private clients, but it's just kind of like for me, it's my church. It, you know, that brings me home every week through everything I've gone through in the last, you know, decade. Having that time to teach and connect with a group is really valuable. And, you know, if you don't, just don't think if you go to one class, basically, that's yoga, that's all it's going to be. You know, you just have to, you might have to do a little homework and ask if there's a teacher that you like, say, you know, find out if they teach other classes or if there's other people who teach in that style. But I'd say really, you know, just for starters, you know, just search up yoga therapy, because it really is a thing now. And you might find a lot more near you than you might think, or at very least you can find online support. Well, I'm really interested now in, you know, Hatha, you'll hear all these different names. Hatha yoga is kind of like the base name of yoga, and really what a lot of the whole, they call it sun salutations and vinyasa, these like series of movements that you'll see people ripping out at the gym and yoga classes. Again, it you can feel great and invigorated doing that, but that's not even really traditional yoga. That's kind of the westernized version of it. So the kind that I practice, teach most at this point, is Kundalini yoga. And so Kundalini focus is very much on the breath. Now, all yoga is about the breath, but you know, I've had students tell me, especially like when I sub, which is always great. It's very informative when you meet new people and they give you feedback. They say, oh, you know, I love that you talk so much about the breath and, you know, when to connect the breath with each movement. Most of my teachers don't usually do that. I go, well, I had it drilled into my head, you know, one of my other early teachers was, it's all about breathing. It's all about connecting with the breath and creating space in the spine. And that's what's going to, starts there. So if you're doing it, and I tell my students to say, if I look around the room and people's faces are all squinched up and they're like, are you breathing? You soften your face. No, and then they'll go, oh, yeah. And if you're making that face, you're doing too much, too hard. It shouldn't be hard. You want to go to the point where you realize your edge. You feel a little bit of that, okay, sensation. Maybe you're getting a little more stretched, but really more than anything, you are in that moment really experiencing what it is to breathe. And most of us, myself included, start out each day and we're breathing we take a breath that goes, maybe to the bottom, you know, like our collarbone. Well, we're not utilizing like 80% of our breath capacity. But that's how most of us walk around, kind of shallow breathing. And then that's, you know, it gets to the point where you're barely breathing at all. And that's when you get breath just multiplies. You don't have the reserve to think clearly and you get frustrated, you know? So little by little, you bring it back to, you know, the movements can be a great distraction just to get you, instead of thinking like, you know, if you can get out of your head of going, oh, I feel dumb doing this or this is weird. But just follow the instruction as given and experience it. Then, you know, we always joke, especially the Kundalini practice can be kind of funky because, you know, some chanting and sometimes it's like, wag your tail like you were a dragon. And like, we're like crawling around. You know, I go, but there's also like laughter yoga, I've got to say too. You just joke, you know, we have a good laugh. I go, I like that, you know, Kundalini, like we get so silly sometimes that, you know, gets you out of yourself.
Yeah. And you can actually be in that moment.
Like, yeah. We're like, I don't even know why this works or, you know, I'm not so deep into the science or whatever, but all I know is we feel so great afterwards and it's, you know, physically feel great and, also just this kind of, you know, it's basically my friend saying, like, it's like getting high on breathing. You know, a lot of addicts and people in recovery really gravitate to Kundalini because of that. It does a lot with recharging the nervous system. And I found, too, like, you know, people be like, oh, man, they're chanting. That's weird. And at the end of the day, it's just sound. It's sound. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's on a deeper level, like when you do a chant like sata nama to break down, you're stimulating that, you know, when your tongue touches your roof at a certain place, you breathe. It's like, you know, it's like acupressure in a way. Okay. But what I found is, you know, meditation, that whole concept was always really hard for me to drop into. I'm like, I can't sit that still. And I had the benefit of my best friend's mom as a major Buddhist, meditator, but, you know, I've known since I was 14 and I had a lot of guidance from her, but still it always eluded me until, you know, and again, you can, this is probably like 15, 20 years and then, you know, doing this, someone says, yes, you know, you're meditating, even when you're doing yoga. I'm like, really? That's like, it's a moving meditation. Meditation doesn't have to just be, sitting still, and it can be, so then also, like, what also brought it deeper is just the idea that when I'm chanting, the sounds after a while, whatever, you know, it just becomes like a hum, you know, and it's just sound. But there's something that happens when, you know, there's this vibration in your chest and in your head and when you're breathing and you're expanding all the way down to your belly and breathing out your sides and like, oh, who knew? I didn't know I really breathed through my shoulder blades. When you start getting to that, it's just, it takes, you know, and sometimes you do little finger, hand gestures. I'm like, okay, now I feel like I'm meditating, or now I really feel present and sitting there. I don't feel like just that awkwardness of just sitting still. And then after doing that for a while, oh, what do you know? Now I can just sit with this and, you know, experience, you know, this place that I've heard of, this kind of peaceful and just stress-relieved zone. It is attainable, but there's many ways. So there's, what I'm just trying to say is there's many ways to get there. Some people dance their ways into it. And the whole idea was originally that yoga, you do whatever kind of practice, you know, if it's intense, if it's, you know, restorative, you do that beforehand, so then you can sit down and meditate. Like, your body's kind of juiced up, so it's ready to be in repose, and your breath is activated, and then it's time you can connect to still the mind and really connect that body, mind, and spirit.
Well, you're talking about meditation, and I've heard from one friend who's in a yoga class, and the way he put it was yoga allows him to safely process his guilt, his shame, his anger, his sadness, his grief. And I'm understanding, from my understanding of it, is that's during the meditation part. But again, touching on that, I mean, it's just an internal thing that he can do at home, and that seems so much – for a lot of guys, that seems like a safer way to process your grief or your shame or your – you know, at least the basic level of it, then a lot of guys don't want to do it in a group. They don't want to do it. I mean, everybody has their own way of healing. And
sure.
You said a minute ago, you know, you don't understand the science. Hey, I don't want to. I've joked with a lot of friends that if I had to, you know, I don't know, kill a chicken and dance around, if it made me better, I'm going to do it. I don't need to understand something for it to work. You know, I don't even care to. As long as it works, it works. You know, nobody has to give me the science mathematics of it. Just it works, and that's what matters. I mean, that's the end of the conversation. You go, well, it worked. So again, I don't particularly care. And one of the things you hit on also is drugs and alcohol dependence and how that can help. Almost all veterans with post-traumatic stress are diagnosed with a secondary diagnosis. Almost every single person I know either has had or has an alcohol problem or a drug problem. Or name your other problems. Jumping out of a plane, they're adrenaline junkies. Right. There's always something. There's always something, because we all look for a way to
sugar.
Yeah, you look for a way to shake it off, because we're all trying to be, oh, I'm going to be a manly man. I'm going to pretend like nothing's wrong, so I'm going to go bungee jumping every single day, or I'm going to drink my way out of it, and then I'll be numb. Whatever. How exactly – you were talking about, you know, it helps with drug and alcohol dependency. How exactly – or for that matter, major depressive disorder. How can it help with any of those things?
Well, again, I mean, the root of it is when we self-medicate, you know, if we use drugs or whatever our fix is, shopping, gambling, whatever it is, it's we want to escape, right? We want to escape the pain. I mean, and that's natural enough, right? But what happens is when we try to escape, when we look for a trap door, basically, we spend all of our time looking for a trap. How am I going to, you know, get my fix? Something just so I can get out of feeling like this. I just want to move out of it. We're tripping into the future, right? Because we're trying to find the thing that's going to just take this away. Instead of just coming into the moment and accepting that this is where we're at. Right now, I feel like shit. Right now, I'm really anxious because I don't know how I'm going to fill my gas tank. Right now, I am so angry, you know, at that person. I'm so angry at myself. I feel the guilt I feel. How am I ever going to run away from this, right? And so that's usually when we're like, screw it. I'm going to go to the bar. I'm going to go, you know, kickboxing, whatever it is that's going to be your rush. But first part is like, it's a big part of it is, you know, is finding acceptance. And that's where I parlay like what we learn in the class. And again, there, you know, you can find like the Kundalini, there's classes online, all of yoga. You can find great things online, but if you're interested, because it does really connect with the, you know, with the recovery aspect. I practiced for like over 15 years before I tried Kundalini and then just blew my head off my practice, you know. And I too, you know, hey, I struggle all the time. For me, it is a day by day, and I'm grateful I have my students, because how many times I would not have even gone to practice if I hadn't had students to show up for, right? So we find this acceptance. It's just like you find acceptance, like, okay, so, you know, my head doesn't reach my knees today. Usually it does, but, you know, or I can't reach my hands very high because my shoulder blade is blown out. In finding that acceptance, instead of being like, I'm not doing it right, but just being like, this is what I'm working with today. And that's what I always say to, and I'm like, what are you working with today? And not what you did last week, not what you hope to do a year from now. Where are we at today? Sit with that, and let's create as much space in that as we can. And I mean physical space, I mean mental space. So, you know, as you breathe, and expand, expand, expand. And sometimes I, you know, also suggest, let's say, you know, the prognosis is eventually you'll be able to reach your hands over your head, you know, or eventually you're hopeful you will, you know, get over your agoraphobia or whatever and leave your house, you know, whatever block you're facing. Part of it is just, you know, in the moment, doing what you can, but really absorbing as if you're fully realizing it. You're fully doing it right now, even if you're not. And not in the future, but just try to bring it into this moment so you have that feeling. It's like people who, you know, I know people who can't walk, but they still dance. You know, they still dance. They find their way. You know, some of the most brave people I know, it's, you have to drop in. You got it. And you got to be really present with it. And the thing is the more we can surrender to how crap everything is and how lost we are and how frustrated we are, and just keep breathing and breathing. And there's a lot of different exercises. Some are fast, some are slow, but could help move through specifically some of these emotions. The more that we do that, the quicker our recovery time comes the next time we fall apart. Because we're going to, that's the nature of life. Life is a roller coaster, and some days that, you know, instead of like going into a depressive tailspin for like days on end, you know, it might last an hour, two, you know, it might last only a couple minutes. You know, instead of like going, you know, punching through a window and everything, you know, you might think about it, but just take a breath and drop down, feel my feet on the floor, and just really be present here and accept, yep, this is just not how I'd like things to be, but oh well. And it sounds so simple when I break it down like that. Right now.
And that's 25 years of you doing it, though, obviously.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot. It never ends. But at the end of the day, you know, and I have to be reminded sometimes, too. But at the end of the day, it's like, you can always breathe. And, you know, that's, you talk about, you know, people who, you know, aren't comfortable going into a class, and that's fine, you know, but I'm telling you, there's plenty of classes out there. Like, yeah, don't go to the class at Equinox or any of these, you know, flashy yoga studios where all the yoga bunnies are going to be, you know, sauntering around. You feel like, oh my God, I can never compete with these people. But I'm telling you, find your community center or your why. Go to a class with the seniors.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, some of them will be kicking your ass. I'm at the Y, I subbed this class. There's like 40, 50 people in the class, most of them well into their 50s and older, and they were rocking it, you know? They were in really, they go all shapes and sizes, but also I'm like, oh, I love seeing people have their blocks, or this person has a chair, or this person, they all know what they need, you know? Or if not, they're like, hey, what should I do to support, you know? They're not afraid to ask questions. So, and they're really encouraging of each other too, you know? That is a nice, if you can find a community. But in the meantime, while you're not comfortable, you know, you can check out the online and look until you find someone who speaks to you. There's so many out there that, like, that my local Kundalini, I live in Los Angeles, a center that's run by the Next Wave, the younger folks, it's called Rama. They have Rama TV. Like, you could tune in from anywhere in the world, and they give you sets. And what we also love about this practice, too, is that you can do a one-minute breathing practice. I mean, obviously, it's better if you do more. But there are some that specifically, all the exercises get broken down It's like 1 to 3 minutes generally. So that's, I mean, you'll work up and go, and now for the next 11 minutes, you're just, you know, I'm not doing, I'm just sitting here raising my hands up like in the V for victory and breathing. Oh, yeah, you do that for 11 minutes, let me tell you. You hit a different reality. But, you know, you build up to that kind of thing. But it's all very attainable. And that's the other, like, the more yin restorative practices aren't, you know, you're not getting up and down from the ground a lot. So saying, if you feel intimidated about the thought of going to a class, do at some point, you do want to go at some point. You want to make sure that you're, you know, having good form. And also there's a great energy that you get when you're with a group, you know, and I know that's a really big step. And trust me, I know, because, you know, I waited years, decades, before I walked into certain rooms that I should have to get the support I needed. I finally did. I'm like, oh my God, I was so afraid. You know, I dealt with a telephone phobia. I'm still not very fond of just making phone calls. I don't know why, but whatever. We all have our things. The why doesn't matter. But the solution is, you know, is the more we breathe, the more our brains get activated. And we have more resources to what is inside of us, but it just gets shut down when, you know, we're not being fed properly.
Okay, no, that all makes sense. So we've talked about the release of emotional issues and how that can help, you know, with the deep breathing. We've talked about help relaxing and even the fact that it would strengthen your body if you do certain styles, but you don't have to. I'm trying to go down my list here because obviously I wrote out a list beforehand of questions to ask and things to think about. Your mind becoming more clear and open, producing feelings of more balance, I guess is the right way to say that. So two things to kind of conclude our interview. One, I would love it if you took us through, like, let's say 3-minute guided breathing just to show people what one of these things sounds like. And how exactly it goes and how it can help. I mean, at home, if you're listening and we start this, please actually do what she says, actually listen and actually try it. So let's try that.
Sure. So the way I start every class, because, you know, I teach at 8 a.m. on Sunday mornings and you'd be amazed how
that's,
chatty. Some
that's motivational.
That
that's 8 a.m. on a Sunday.
We're a special group.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's only 8 years, yep. But it's, you know, it's a certain, it's like, well, I'm up at 5:30 anyway, so why not? But,
yeah, once you have kids, that whole sleeping in thing is over.
What's that?
I said, once you have kids, that whole sleeping in thing is over.
Exactly,
yeah,
right.
That ended a decade ago. Yeah, there's none of that nonsense. So, yeah, people say, oh, I slept in Sunday. Yeah. I said, what's that like? I haven't done that in 20 years. But sorry, go ahead. Sunday's the same as every other day when you're three. You know?
Talking about sleep's like a parent's crack. Right? How long did you sleep?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a meal where I didn't have to share it with somebody. So, but all right, I'm taking you off subject here because I do that. But go ahead.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good, and that's, you know, again, encouraging community is a big part of relieving stress. You know, because we're not alone. Whether we feel we are or not, we're not. So start out by, you know, you're in a comfortable seated position. Now, cross-legged, sitting flat on the floor, that's called Sukhasana. I'll try to avoid the Sanskrit terms, but that's very common. Sukhasana. Now, I usually sit on a rolled-up mat or a pillow in Sukhasana with my legs still crossed. Sometimes my knee is bothering me. I might use another pillow or mat just to support the right knee, and it just takes the pressure off, and I'm more comfortable seated. Some folks, that's, you know, again, you could be seated in a chair. If you are, you just want to really have an even seat slumping. You could be seated on the floor with your legs extended forward, just straight ahead. And again, if you're tight at all, it's amazing, the release of the hip flexors. If you just sit on a pillow or, you know, just elevating a couple inches. In some practices, you sit like almost like a foot up on bolster. So it's just find the way you're comfortable to sit, okay? Because not everybody you know, again, you get disconnected. So you start, you find your comfortable seated position. Close the eyes just to block out all everything around us, that we're not being distracted by just looking around at, oh, look at that bug crawling across the floor. No. We're just going to close your eyes. Now, you tilt the pelvis forward and back a couple times, okay? So pelvic tilts are really important because all movement really stems from the pelvis, and most of us don't lead from there. And I am definitely prone for, like, arching my lower back. And you know, some of us stand and we kind of hyperextend our calves back, and so your knees are locked, and that is just murder for the back pain. And then all that transfers up to our mental well-being, because if we're blocked and the spine's blocked, you know, the nerves aren't getting the proper stimulation. It all goes together. So simple pelvic tilt, you're just kind of just tilting forward, back, and you realize when you tilt back, that's when the navel is engaged to the lower spine, and that's when the lower back is flat. You know, so this doesn't make sense. Don't worry about it, but you can just experience with tilting forward and back and notice, where does my spine feel like? And it might feel a little weird if you don't have core strength, or even if you do have core strength, you might not have any, you know, you never move like that. So anyway, you're done with the pelvic tilt, and then kind of move a little bit side to side. So imagine you just want to see where's the spine at, like a gentle wave to side to side from the base of the spine all the way up to the shoulders, the neck, and out the crown of the head, just to then tilt, and then come back to a neutral spot. So then hopefully we're kind of getting an assessment of, all right, that's where the spine and the back is. And I always like having the image too of like a puppeteer is gently tugging on my skull. Joe, you there?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm listening. I'm actually trying to do it. I'm sitting here trying to do this, so I muted myself so you wouldn't hear my chair squeaking all over.
Oh, I heard some feedback. Okay, so that's great. Okay, so you're sitting, so, visualizations are huge for this practice, at least for me, and you're learning from me at this moment, so that's, you know, go on the ride. So, but the idea is that, like, you've got a little puppeteer string that's just gently tugging your crown, so there's always a little bit of, you know, movement, a little bit of a wave, you know, subtle, even if you can't see it or even barely feel it, but we're not statues, right? So even when we look still, we are truly not, because we're breathing, and we're not rigid. Now, if we're forcing ourselves into rigidity, again, that's what we're creating blocks. All right, so we've got the spine loosened up, the eyes are closed, and the knees, the hands are resting on the knees, whether they're extended forward or you're in Shavasana, the cross-legged position. And now see what's going on. Are you holding on to the arms? So just kind of shake out the elbows. Just you really want the shoulders to drop. Feel the weight of the hand just resting on the knees. You know, just notice. Notice the connection of the feeling of your palm, your fingers connecting to the material on your pants. Just noticing. And trying to just really let that be loose and not holding the arms at all. And then the final thing before we get into the real breath work is the third eye point. So, say the third eye rests in the center of your forehead. Imagine like a quarter of an inch inside, a little pearl, okay? It's like your seat of intuition and near the pineal gland. So they say this is where all of when you have the instinct. You know, instinctively some place is dangerous, or your instinct is, oh, this might be a great thing to try, or whatever. It rests there in the third eye. So you want to, your eyes are still closed, but you want to roll your eyeballs up, pointing up towards the third eye. Now, what does this do? Because your eyes are closed, does it matter if you're looking at it yet? I'm like, I can't really look at it. I don't see anything. Doesn't matter. Just act as if, just try through the instruction, whatever suggested here. So you're giving your eyeballs a nice stretch, and that's something we really don't do. especially with all of our screen time and iPhones, like, I mean, I'm lucky, I'm 45, I've never had to wear glasses, but, you know, in the last couple of years since I first got an iPhone, boy, it's been rapid degeneration. And I've read a lot about how it's because we don't challenge our eyes. They don't get enough exercise. We don't look at far distances enough. So you do these eyeball rolls, it really does, it helps. Again, we're getting more blood flow to the eyes. You know, we don't really think about that even being a thing. And if it gets too, you know, intense and you just can't do it or forget about it, don't worry. Do it if you can, or if you're, you know, just give it a try. All right, so we're sitting here. And anytime again, just keep it loose, give it a tilt if you need to, or recross the legs, bring the other leg in front, but just find yourself so you're seated. So now, let's take a look at the breath and just acknowledge where the breath is at right here, right now, as we begin. Breathing only in and out through your nose, if possible. So you breathe in through your nose, and just this first one's just an assessment. Take your first breath. How far does it go? Like, mine goes about to my collarbone. What about you, Joe?
Well, I've actually been kind of having deep breathing in the past. I actually had started kind of as you were doing that entire instruction. So mine are already mine are already going kind of deep
because
I actually really love doing deep breathing. It's one of my favorite things now. Ever since one of my people at the vet center talked to me about it, and the first time he had me do it, he basically laughed in my face because, again, I'm really good friends with those guys, so I expect them to talk to me the way my Marines do. So I said, okay. He said, breathe as deep as you can. And I tried, and he's like, no, dude, now take twice that or three times that breath, you know, because you can just keep pulling more and more and more in, and you don't even think about it. 99% of people don't even think about it. What you hit on earlier, you breathe to about 10% usually.
Right.
You breathe to about, you know, if you watch a skin diver getting ready to dive, how much he can breathe in, that's just because he's trained and
right.
He's thought about it. So, but.
Well, that's excellent then. So you already have, you know, breath work is already part of your practice. That's great. All right. Well, we're going to dial back then again, back to where we were. So we're seated. Our eyes are rolled up at third eye point. And just in and out through the nose. So wherever you're at, you just notice where it started. And now let's bring it deeper with the next time. Inhaling through the nose. Feel the air go down the back of the throat. And all the way down to the belly, it swells a little bit. And then exhaling, pull the navel to the back of the spine. So actively expelling the air, give me a little push back up. And then continue. Inhale. And exhaling. Now you're here to do this audible breath. Just keep breathing as big as an inhale and exhale as you can. I'll explain the audible breath after, because I just don't want to derail us. It's called the Ujjayi breath. And it just creates more heat. So now that we're breathing and you feel the breath going, oh, okay, yeah, it does go all the way down to my belly. That's great. Now with every exhalation, it's one thing, you don't want to collapse the rib cage or the shoulders. You want to keep this lovely live spine going and feeling that puppeteer giving you that easy lift as you breathe, creating more space. But also notice, where am I holding on physically? You could go, oh, I'm really clenching my hips. So let them just soften up. Or my toes or the eyes, face, that's a very common one. You're thinking so hard. So I say, keep breathing. If you notice your face is intense, or often the teacher will comment to one person and it applies to 10 of us, I could do a little Buddha smile. And all a Buddha smile is just taking your face from a frown to turning the little corners of your mouth slightly up, and you'll feel it, like the whole face starts to relax. So that's, you know, we kind of joke with that. Someone says something we don't like, and we give a fake smile, but in a way, you're giving your body a trigger in your brain to, like, I'm going to be calm through this situation, right? Act as if. Sometimes we just, some of the best advice I ever got when I was really dealing with anger management in college at one point was, my teacher said, just sometimes you have to fake it. Fake that you're feeling good. And you might just fake yourself into a whole different mood. You know, feelings are not facts. Keep breathing. So now that you've got this good connection to the breath is starting to really pump, we're going to bring in the concept now of full body breathing. So, you know, think, oh, take a breath. Yes, the belly goes up and down the throat. I get that. But now try to imagine as you breathe, the belly does expand, but also the side of the body. And even through the shoulder blades, through each vertebra, and then realize at the top of the breath, there's a space that happens, a pause in the action before you begin to exhale, right? Then you exhale, and the bottom of the exhalation, there's another pause. There's this gap in time and space before you physically begin the next breath. Keep going, observing that gap, letting the physical fall, noticing where the tension travels to because it will. Get rid of that spot you're holding in the shoulder. Suddenly your left ankle is clenched. It's okay. Or maybe it's your mind. Maybe the mind's going, this is insufferable. It doesn't matter. Or, hey, you know what? Oh, I can't wait to go out to dinner tonight. So ready for sushi. Okay, that's lovely. Now bring it back to the breath. And then start to move past even the physical at all. And just imagine like that your core, your where your navel center is, that is like almost like it's the center of a sun, right? Just a ball of light, and then you inhale. Just every pore, breathing out through every pore in the body, and then inhaling, drawing it in. And as you keep going and keep doing this breath, you can let the jaw hang open. That's a place where I hold a lot of tension, and I wasn't aware of it for years, and until an acting teacher said to me, she's like, do you realize that your jaw is like a vice grip? And I didn't. This is like, you know, 5 years after my major trauma, 5 years into my PTSD or post-traumatic normal, I didn't even realize it. And then once I got in there, it was like, holy crap, like just years of tension and holding on. And it's taken a long time. And I still notice sometimes, that's part of my assessment when I do the breathing. Full body breathing. And before we conclude this part, I want to revisit that concept of gap. Okay, so that space at the top of the inhalation, there's a pause, and then you exhale, there's a pause, and then I inhale. You start to build the length that you hold the breath for those pauses. Maybe it's 4 seconds. And see if you can exhale and hold the exhale for 4 seconds, or however long it is. You keep building on that gap, and that ties into finding the mental space, just a moment of stillness. Holding the breath can be there, very powerful part of the practice. And now to come out of this, take a couple more deep breaths now, bringing in all the air that you possibly think you can. And then take in a little bit more, hold that gap, and then exhaling, don't collapse, really work it out with the navel. And then you're at the bottom, work out a little bit more. And then just a couple easy breaths. And then I always like to finish each breathing sequence. I bring the hands out to the side, fingers spread wide. And then inhaling up, sweep the hands up overhead until your palms meet. Press the palms together. And then exhale, release, back down to prayer position at the heart. The palms are pressed together right in front of your middle of your chest. You take one more deep inhalation. Exhale. And then gently tilt your chin down just a little bit. Kind of like slightly, just like quarter. Open your eyes. So you're looking at the tips of your fingertips. You breathe air. Now, this too, just this in and of itself, is called Anjali Mudra, prayer position of the heart. You know, you hold your hands together, you get that little bit of focus down to your fingertips, and it can instill calm when you're feeling stressed. One more breath, and then exhale, release the hands, and fold your legs and shake them out. Another good one that builds on that, which I learned when I was really nervous about my junior prom, and I was kind of getting antsy, and my friend's mom, the Buddhist I told you about, mm-hmm. said, try to look at the tip of your nose. Now, that's impossible to do, but you try to. You bring your focus in, and now just breathe. One of the first breathing exercises I ever learned. So you feel anxiety coming up. You feel stress. You feel anger. Do that. Maybe throw in a little Buddha smile. Bake it till you make it. Maybe let the jaw drop open. And then just let it go. So that's just a very, you know, functory kind of guided. I usually do that for about 5 minutes at the end of my class. I think it took a little longer because breaking it down a lot. But that's when you can totally, you know, guide yourself in because you're connecting to the physical. You just do your little inventory. Like some days it's like, oh boy, I can't. You know, some days I'll have real compassion for my students. Like I had one time, I don't know, I worked out too hard or something, but I could not, you know, normally I can drop my head to my knees. Again, I'm a mutant. It's nothing to do with being fit or anything. I just can. One day I was so sore, like I could barely tip. I'm like, wow, now I really, because I try to feel it, you know, I try to get into the space my students are actually, I know some are actually flexible in some ways, but they can't tilt forward. And I'm like, wow, this is really informative. I can, you know, seeing how the other half lives, but I get it now, you know? But I go, what can make it even just a little bit more? Breath and release. The concept of, you know, really working out the breath, kind of an extra pump. We hold a lot of, that's the other idea, you know, the old saying, like, out with the bad air, in with the good.
Yeah.
We don't want to label it like that, but the idea is that we actually retain, I can't remember the percentage, but something astounding, like 60% of the air, or 40% at the bottom of our lungs has just kind of been, is old air that just hasn't been recycled out properly because we haven't had deep enough breathing to get it out. That's why you feel great after cardio, you know, you'll get that rush because you've really worked the lungs and really flushed it all out. But a lot of us don't do much cardio, but you can get that. You can get the same effect when you commit to a breathing practice. I'll say a big part for those of you who are interested and go to look up the Kundalini practice. Don't be afraid. Yes, everyone wears white, silver turbans, but trust me, those are like, you know, the masters. Not everybody does. I don't. I do wear. You do feel good. You got to say though, you do feel really good wearing white. There's something about it, like energetically. You know, try doing that when you do your practice instead of wearing black. And you know, I know black's really rock and roll and cool and everything, but just try it. It's like these little things. You know, it's funny. You think this is bullshit. Like, how should that even matter? But it's these little things. You try it, and you walk around wearing all white. You know, of course, if you're in a cult, but it's when you're in. I've gone to these conferences where you have to wear the whole white gear to do the thing, and it is like it's intense just before anything even happens. Like, wow, this is like a this is an energy shift, and that's what we're looking for, right?
A lot of us are Marines. A lot of us who listen to this program are Marines. We were already in a pretty cool cult. we don't have a problem with that.
Right.
We've already been in a pretty intense cult group. So we understand completely.
Well, this is like a cult of, you know, people just, you know,
a lot calmer than our last one.
Get their bliss on. Yeah. So
substantially calmer than our other group.
Yeah. Facing, you know, when you're facing that stress and the anxiety and depression. Silly, just go put on a white shirt, you know, or just if you don't have white, just something light, but not just your dark, you know, the dark colors. It does, it'll change your, you know, and like go outside, sit in the sun, get some fresh air.
We hit, you know, this earlier.
The other thing.
We hit on it earlier, and I'll say it again right now. It doesn't matter why it works. That's the part that people keep, you know, people very often miss that in almost everything that we'll bring up here, whether it's horse therapy, whether it's PTSD dogs, no matter what it is. It doesn't matter why it works. It matters that it works. So it doesn't if wearing all white makes you feel better, don't justify that to anybody. Don't worry about why it works. It just does. And when people question it, say, hey, look, I'm happier this way. Whatever. Who cares? And again, most of us who have been through what a lot of us have been through, we're not real big on what other people think anyway. We're generally pretty we're not usually worried about the average cat, what they think of us, because we're already pretty far on our own program. So wearing white wouldn't change our day much.
Right, then you're ahead of the game right there, because that is a lot of like what hinders a lot of people and you know, just growing in their practice, because it takes time.
Yesterday offline we were talking about, I believe it is the shame of doing certain things kills more people and affects more people than almost anything else in the world. It's amazing what people will not do because they're afraid of what others think. And one of the beautiful things about most disgruntled veterans is we're over that. We just don't seem to care as much as the average person, because we've seen what really matters in the world, and it's really hard to care about little tedious crap after that. It's terribly hard after a firefight to ever again worry about what you're wearing. it takes a lot to come back to a point where you care what kind of shoes you have on.
Right?
Yeah, you just it's like I said, also, it's very hard. So
it's about, I say talk about like acceptance and accepting the moment as it is. It's also, it's about forgiveness. And sometimes the Kundalini practice ends with a song, but you sing three rounds of it, and it's basically first is a prayer to yourself, a prayer to someone who needs it, and a prayer to someone you need to forgive. And I say, you know what? You might be the same person in all of those categories today, or you could put several, and I often have put myself in the place that I need to forgive. I have so much shame that it was just so unnecessary.
People blame themselves for
other people. The grace of forgiveness, and maybe in time, it took me a long time. I at one point learned to just forgive myself, just for like, okay, I didn't have the right answer then. I didn't know.
People are, like I said, they're so harsh to themselves, and yet they would forgive. We have this conversation almost every time I'm in a group therapy class, where someone will say, I did this, I did that, I did this. And I said, well, if one of your friends did that, or if one of your Marines or one of your brothers, one of your soldiers, whatever, did that, would you hold them accountable? And they say, oh, of course not. Then why do you hold yourself accountable? And that can apply to any part of life. And so when you say forgive yourself, it's amazing how much we hold ourselves accountable for things that in most cases you had no control over. There's no way that you could have known or seen.
Right.
But somehow, again, if it was somebody else, you'd forgive them in a third of a second. But because it's you, you can hold yourself accountable. And being able to calm yourself and to think, maybe you can connect. How can I put this properly? Very often, on a logical level, I know that I'm not guilty of something. But on an emotional level, it's hard to forgive yourself. And so possibly with deep breathing.
Like, I should have the answer. I shouldn't have to do it. In a way, it's like it's this reverse we feel like we're being kind of humble, but in a way it's just like, well, why should you think that you have the answer to everything anyway? Or it's not, you're not responsible. And it's hard. It's as parents, as people, you've been as soldiers who your responsibility was taking care of people, and at an extreme level. This circles back to the next layer to all of that. If the forgiveness is also, surrendering to when you really need to ask for help. And I had to do that recently. And it was very, very profound, the results, because I've been out of work for a long time. I went through a tough divorce situation. There's, been some fallout for just emotionally with, the kids and other stuff. And I just kept falling behind. And I just started, even doing less of my yoga, doing less of the things that make me feel good, because just trying to survive, and it gets like, well, if I can't pay the bills, it's like, it really gets all consuming, that financial stress, that's just.
Well, the ball of stress is like a snowball. The stress ball can feed itself faster than almost anything else in the world. You get stressed about one thing.
I felt like I was pulled.
And it moves on to the next. Yeah. It just becomes bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
So.
it just keeps, yeah, manifesting. I felt like I was now had a cannonball that was dragging me into quicksand. And, you know, I have a great boyfriend who's really supportive. I have tons of friends. And finally, I mean, I was at that point where I started having, like, really stupid, like, thoughts. I'm like, okay, I know, like, this is not the, you know, the answer, but I'm just like, what am I, you know, how am I going to do this? I can't be this person. I can't, you know, be a failure as a mother or all these labels. And finally I just realized, you know, I lost my cool, like, the last time. And I was like, and I just realized this is not working. And just like you were saying before, Joe, I said, you know, if one of my friends came to me, you know, and told me that they were feeling the way I'm feeling right now, I would do what I could to help them, you know. And so I wrote a letter and BCC'd it to like 20 of my friends and just laid it out. Some people, you know, I haven't seen in years, some I see all the time. Some people knew about my state, some people didn't. But I just said, you know, I'm looking for work. I am now at the point where I just need any work. I'll babysit. I'll do whatever I'm physically capable of. I don't care for, you know, a decent thing. I go, if you could help another, you know, if you can refer me to a job, it can be good. Here's, I attached my resume and I took ownership for the parts that, you know, it's not like I can't just blame everything on circumstance or other people. I have my part too, but it comes back to, it's like, you know what, I've done the best I can. I have only so much energy in a day. I have only so many resources or whatever. And, yeah, I did make some poor choices here and there. So it was a big surrender, but as soon as I sent it, I felt so much better. Like, at first, I'm like, this is going to be horrible. I'm like, no, I'm not going to put this on Facebook and tell everybody and be a drama queen. I'm going to pick some people who, first of all, who I know are doers, who I think really might have an answer for me, you know, suggestions for where to go for work or, you know, might be able to help. And, you know, and I said, if you would like to share this, you know, with other mutual friends, you can, but please don't forward the email. I just don't want it getting viral or whatever. But the response was so amazing from just people, like, lending their moral support, people giving me, you know, Trader Joe's cards and, like, cash support so I could get my bills caught up on for the meantime. And then within 4 days, I got offered a job, like my dream job too. So it was, you know, it's like I'm just happy to get just a regular, I've been working freelance for so long. I just want a regular paycheck, a regular with decent people who aren't sociopaths, you know? Is that asking too much?
Hey, in LA, I'm
in LA, you know, I know.
You mean you're trying to find a group of people not sociopaths in LA? You know, moving might help.
Yeah. They are out there. They're not all like that.
I know. I just love giving you grief.
we're open targets and well-deservedly so. But so anyway, so my friend's husband, who I sent the email to her, and he's a friend too. But, you know, we get together, like, I don't know, every other month or so. He said, you know, he called me. He's like, I'm so struck by, you know, the bravery you had to write that letter, and it's because I just really admire that, because I think that I can help you. And I was like, help me? I mean, he offered me the chance to, you know, I have a chance now, you know, nothing's guaranteed, but I have a chance at a really, like, not something to be a job, but a career that I could be really, you know, excited about. And I mean, to think of, like, you know, 4 days before, I was just like, what am I going to do? Like, it's
the bottom and the top aren't that far apart. Too many people think that the bottom and the top of life aren't that far apart. Too many people think that they're a million miles away, and they're not. They're one or two decisions. They're one or two moments. They're one or two good things happening or bad things happening. And it's very fast how quickly you can turn around. What you said 4 days ago was a bad time. I mean, 4 days from the letter, obviously. We're a bad time, and then again, yeah. It turns around so fast because it doesn't take much. What you said about opening up and surrendering to the fact that you needed help, that is the hardest thing for me to get across to my Marines, to all my friends who need help, is it's not weakness to ask those that you love and care about for help. I would never in my wildest dreams –
You're honoring them. It's quite the opposite.
Exactly. You're showing how strong you are, that you have – no shame, that you have no fear to say, hey, I do have a problem. I often, when I'm talking to people about post-traumatic stress, when I am talking to people about the different physiological and how it actually works, how the medical side of it works, not how you feel, but how the actual medicine of it works, I go, would you be embarrassed if you broke your arm? And I always tell people, if I fell off the roof and you tripped on the sidewalk and we both broke our arm, should we not go to the same doctor? So it doesn't matter how it happened. It matters that it happened. Right. And when you're in need of help, having the courage to ask for it, it's above and beyond what 90% of people are willing to do. And that's how we came across that conversation about shame yesterday. Is it's amazing how many people in my community, in the post-combat normal community, end up choosing the wrong way out, you know, the choosing suicide rather than asking for help, choosing to ignore the problem instead of asking for help, choosing to live a life alone and never have a good life again instead of asking for help. And instead of, as you said, instead of honoring their friends and family and loved ones and whoever else they have around them, their fellow military members, and giving them the opportunity to love them. I'm going to digress a little bit, but every time I hang up the phone now with one of my Marines, I say I love you at the end. And I've been given some grief about it. They say to me, you know, very often the first time I say it, they go, what do you mean? Like, no, dude, like, I love you. Like, not, you know, nothing weird. I you're my family now. You're the people that I care about the most in this world, because I know what you've gone through and I know how long it's going to take to heal it. And I want you to understand that, again, I love you. And if you need something, please call me. My battalion itself has a phone tree for that, where if somebody's in crisis, we have almost everybody else's phone number. And I pray that other units, other groups, whether it's two guys, get each other's numbers, man. Once a week, check in, find a way to help each other, because it's only us that's going to do it. It's only the community. You can't help yourself out of this. You can't fix your own broken arm. No. You know, you can't cast yourself. It doesn't happen. You have to ask for help. And the people who are going to help you, well, again, I'm going on a really long tangent, but it's like in my mind, it blows my mind, because, you know, again, being able to do this at home will get you to the point where you, okay, let me come back from that, because I could go on for hours, and obviously we have to wrap this up at some point. But when I tried to learn deep breathing.
Why is that yoga? Why is that whatever? Is that we are all interconnected.
Yeah.
That's why I say, like, you know, I understand if you're a little embarrassed, you're not comfortable at first, but get familiar with the practice, and then, you know, go out there and find the community. You know,
well, and to get familiar with it.
It's like you show up. It's fun.
To get familiar with it, what I started to do, instead of buying the DVD of the guy doing the weird movements, I just YouTubed deep breathing led discussion or deep breathing led. And my real, the reason I got into it wasn't really even as much anger. It turned out to be that to help me in real life and in other situations. But initially it was because I was sleeping less than 2 hours a night. It's a common side effect. 90% of vets who suffer from this, we almost all have a fear of going to sleep, because every time you go to sleep, you see your friends. You know, and not the ones that you want to see, the ones that are in bad spots.
Yeah.
And so you're afraid of it. And so I would YouTube, you know, guided discussion, deep breathing, and it would help me go to sleep. Man, it would take me to a different level, and I could finally relax. And it sounds silly to people, but I go, I was getting 4 hours of sleep a night. I felt rested. And people say, 4 hours, that's ridiculous. Hey, it's twice what I was getting before, and now I'm up to almost 5.5.
Right.
You know what 5.5 means
to me?
That's huge. It's amazing. And when you're used to 2 and you get 5, you go, oh my God, this feels good. I can't imagine what 8 feels like, but maybe one day I'll get there. And those are the steps. People very often, they think, well, I'm not healed. Well, I'm hell of a lot better than I was a year ago, and 10 times better than I was 3 years ago. So yeah, I ain't better.
Right.
Of course I'm not healed, but I'm better than I was. And that's all that a guy can ask for every day. Don't expect that the first time you do a deep breathing exercise on YouTube that you're going to walk out of your house and start skipping down the road like you just been, you know. It's not how it works. But if you can incrementally help yourself, you know.
Yeah. One of my neighbors, she took like one class of mine like 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We did the breathing and she was like, wow, that breath work's amazing. She recently was in the hospital and she told me, she goes, I just was lying there in a having that treatment, I was doing your breathing work. And just the other patient was like, what are you doing? How come you're able? She's like, oh, I just do this breathing. And I go, wow, that was like one. I felt bad. I'm like, geez, that was one class 6 years ago. I really should have walked across the street and given you another. It's like, and I'm like, that goes, that, you know, even just a little bit goes such a long way. People will have like major experiences, and then hopefully you want more. But yeah, to stick with it, you know. And if you don't like a teacher, then find another one.
Yeah, there's a million people.
Too. And also, though, don't get too caught in only one person.
Yeah.
Everyone is different. Everyone has different things to share, and you know, it takes a community. And you know, it's just know that you're not alone. There's people are suffering, and people are finding solutions. All
and people want to help. When you tell them why you're there, they want to help you. I've in the entire time that I've been dealing with different therapies, different ways of doing this, every time I talk to a person, I have not one time received a negative comment about, oh God, why would you be here for PTSD? Not ever. I've never once had anyone say to me anything negative. So believe me, when you go in and any instructor, any yoga instructor, if you walk up and you tell them why you're there and what you want out of it, they'll help you. They want to. People are they're generally not
people
mean.
People want to help.
And it's hard to remember that after combat, because generally the people we met in combat were not the nicest. That's kind of why we're there. So it's so easy to forget that generally people are actually really nice and they want to help you. So, you know, please go down. If you have to, start with the YouTube videos, get comfortable, deep breathing, and then eventually venture out and find somebody. But again, we're getting into the hour and 15-minute mark, and we got to lock this up because people don't listen to it if it gets too long, because I can drone on. So
I just want to throw out there, Joe, that I have a Facebook page called Yoga with Liberty. So if you're on Facebook, you can find me there, or just through Joe if you have questions, or you know, you'd like me to refer you to some places more directly. I'd be happy to help. So just you can reach out that way.
In the military, we have a funny saying, but do you have any save rounds? Anything else that you have to add at the end that could really help these kids out? Let me edit that. That could really help these Marines or not. Okay, yeah. Let me edit it again. Do you have anything that could really help these guys out at the end?
Do I have anything else that could really help them? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, sorry. I'll edit this part again. I'll just say the whole sentence.
It's just a little fuzzy.
Yeah.
Anything else that could really help them?
Yeah, let me.
I think I pretty much covered it.
Okay. Let me just say it one more time. And
one
then
other
just
thing.
Say goodbye.
No, you know, one other thing I want to say, another one of these basic things, like drink lots of water.
we have a sentence for that too. We call it hydrate or die. Because
I'm telling you, I just went and got some nice little electrolyte infused water, because it's 90 degrees and it's February here and it's ridiculous. But,
yeah, because only in California can you have a,
and doing this,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Whatever. I meant to live in Norway, you know, where it's cold and dark, but listen, especially like the breathing exercises, it is very detoxifying. And sometimes you'll even like kind of have like a yucky taste on your tongue, even like a metallic taste, depending on the breath work that you end up doing. Water is key. Drink it throughout, and just, you know, have, you have to have like a good couple quarts a day or whatever the recommended is. It's, you know, usually more if you're taking medication. So don't underestimate that, because that's another thing. Not breathing and you're not hydrated, you're going to feel like crap. Okay, so those are just like basic things, just like, oh, yeah, wow, I haven't eaten all day. Oh, well, guess what?
I should probably do
that. You're going to feel
yes.
better. You're going to feel even better if you, instead of having, you know, a donut, if you, you know, have a healthy, balanced meal.
Yeah.
some protein and vegetables and fruit and, you know, so just set yourself up for success as much as you can, you know, and believe me, I am in no way like, you know, a bodhisattva, a realized person, believe me. But I have my moments.
Well, what I said a minute ago.
I build on those.
What I said a minute ago, every inch counts, every ounce counts. Mm-hmm. It's 1% at a time. It's not about getting there. I mean, you've been doing it 25 years. If you start today, you're not going to feel better. Yeah. I mean, you are going to feel better today, but you're not going to feel cured today. But give it time. Keep every ounce counts, every inch, every millimeter. You know, keep pushing it. And that's what I want these guys to do, is it's not about fixing yourself in 24 hours.
Right.
It's about fixing yourself and fixing your life forever.
It's not about fixing, period. It's about, you know, say the joys and the journey. It's day by day, and we could feel a million different emotions in the span of a day.
Isn't that the truth?
You know, so you just have to try to stick with it, and there's, you know, we're just living in such an amazing time for the access to information. It really is true. Like, there's so many great spiritual teachers out there who get it, you know, who get on a deep level. And just look for military yoga. I mean, it's out there.
Yeah, I've found a lot of programs, and they exist all over the country. So, yeah, look it up.
Yeah.
You know, Google just those words, military yoga, and it will show up. Military, PTSD, yoga, mm-hmm. Add it however you want. And I hate that I keep using the sentence PTSD, but believe me, when you Google it, don't try to Google post-combat normal. No one knows what I'm talking about except us. You know, it's
time to start a movement.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
I like that. But, you know, that's why I say, like, don't say, oh, out with the bad air. No, yeah. You know, it's just used. You don't need it anymore.
In 10 years, I hope everyone in the world uses that sentence, because it's not about what they think of us. It's what we think of us. So, again, Liberty, I really want to say thank you for coming on. You've been a huge help. I hope all these gentlemen that are listening, all these ladies and gentlemen that are listening, do what we told them to do today. At least try the deep breathing. You don't have to do any of the rest of it.
Give it a try.
As long as you at least try the deep breathing. It is so hugely helpful. It doesn't sound like it will be. I know how skeptical military members are, but it works. And it doesn't matter how it works. It just works. So thank you again. And I think that's it for today. So ladies and gentlemen, you can find me at PTGrow on Twitter if you have any questions. The Facebook page is Post Combat Normal. If you Google Post Combat Normal, we are the only thing that comes up, because I have not got the movement going quite yet. So, again, if you're looking for us, you can find us 1,000 different ways. Just Google us. Like I said, PT Grow on at PT Grow on Twitter. Anything you need. And ladies and gentlemen, have a great day.